I'll call to order the Subcommittee on Public Safety, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Colleagues, today is May 14th, 2015, and we are convened for the purposes of an informational hearing regarding the Justice Reinvestment Initiative grants. We've got a lot of people to get through, and so that's why I am taking over the gavel. We'll most likely hand it back shortly to Representative Williamson when she arrives, but I did feel like we needed to get going to make sure that we could hear from everybody and make their testimony part of the record. Ms. Gilbert, anything to tee it up for us?
I don't have anything else, just other than the names are there, I think.
Okay, just the panel. Oh.
There she is.
Perfect timing.
And there he is.
All right.
I just
open your hearing?
Really just opened the hearing, so we
can. All right. So, first panel, Daryl Larson, Dave Williams, Kay Torin.
We don't have two chairs.
We don't have to. Oh, I always forget. We only have two. Daryl and Dave. Come on up.
So we're not going to do the grant. We're not doing the grant. Oh, we had a grant. We had it. So not.
Okay, good afternoon, co-chairs Williamson, Shields, and committee members. My name is Daryl Larson. I'm chair of the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, and I think our executive director, Mike Schmidt, has already covered our budget outcomes so far on 3194 and some of our implementation work with the counties. Our approach today is to offer you a more community-level face about where the real work gets done. First of all, I want to give you a little bit about my background, because my job is just to intro, basically, our speakers today. My background is that it's kind of a reference point, actually, for 3194, because it serves as what is possible and what we hope this legislation will accomplish for Oregon. For 19 years, I was a prosecutor in the Lane County District Attorney's Office, and for 18 years thereafter, I was a circuit court judge in Lane County. I started one of the first 10 drug courts in the United States, the second in Oregon, had 7 years of experience actively overseeing that drug court. I also started one of the first 5 mental health courts in the United States here in Oregon in Lane County, and I have been continuously involved with Oregon's specialty court process since 1993. The reason I mention drug courts at all is that I think that they're an analog for what we're striving for under 3194. To apply state-of-art evidence-based practices to offenders at the community level, maximize their pro-social training and positive involvement in the community, cover as many bases as possible concerning their assessed needs to maximize positive long-term outcomes with each of them, and to allow communities to be flexible and creative to best apply what is needed to achieve those positive outcomes. During my time as a drug court judge, we tried to take the most dysfunctional people we could find coming into the criminal justice system who would fit within the criteria of allowed participants in our drug court program. We basically full court pressed them every step of the way. First of all, we showed we believed in their ability to change for the better. We provided the resources and opportunities to do exactly that, and then we made sure that they complied with what we were trying to force them to do. We eventually obtained an over 70% graduation rate in Lane County's drug court. We saw people routinely metamorphose from drug-addicted losers to productive, employed, tax-paying citizens who had regained not only their own lives and self-respect, but who were no longer a drag on their community or family. That is the promise of what is possible under 3194. It is not possible without adequate funding. The Justice Reinvestment Act has brought people within communities together to talk about public safety issues. And not infrequently, the people that are being brought together were people who were not included in the discussion previously. It has reinvigorated many of the lipsticks in this state with a renewed sense of purpose, and some of them had kind of lost their way. A significant portion of the funds will be used for nonprofits that work with both victims and offenders, which I think is a really good direction in Oregon that isn't oftentimes done in some other places. The funding will allow counties to go above the minimum legal standards of supervision and allow them to apply already successful evidence-based models and promising programs. The ultimate goals are not just to create people who no longer commit crimes, but rather to create successful, capable citizens with educations, real jobs, and careers, people who no longer have a drug or alcohol problem, or at least can stay on top of that, and in short, to help people not to just get by, but to allow them to thrive as human beings. The people who are with me here today are the point people who will with your support, make that happen in Oregon. They include, to my right, Dave Williams, the Vice President of Northwest Natural Gas, and I'm going to turn this over to Dave.
Great. Good afternoon. Co-chairs Representative Williams and Senator Shields, committee. Thank you, first of all, for giving me an opportunity to do a little testimony today. My name is Dave Williams. I'm Vice President of Utility Services for Northwest Natural and former chair of the Citizens Crime Commission. Been with Northwest Natural for about 37 years and been involved with the Citizens Crime Commission for close to a decade. I'm here today in support of full justice reinvestment funding as part of the public safety reforms contained in House Bill 3194. We join other business associations in supporting public safety reforms as a part of the business plan to help grow Oregon's economy by making wise investments of our public dollars. For two decades, the Citizens Crime Commission has brought a business perspective to public safety policy and practices. We work closely with governmental officials, criminal justice professionals, and lawmakers to make Oregon's state and local community safer. During that time, we have seen a lot of success in crime reduction thanks to policy decisions investing scarce resources in the right places. But we are also aware of troubling trends in our state that threaten to erode the headway that we've made towards safer communities. While I'm not a policy expert on corrections, our board follows the work of the Governor's Public Safety Commission made up of experts and appreciate their comprehensive examination of the data and trends in corrections. Their report highlights the strength of Oregon public safety systems. We have generally used our prisons for violent crimes and sex offenses, but the report also highlights the unmistakable trend towards using more of our prison beds for people convicted of non-violent offenses. That trend is that trend, if left unaltered, would have meant that prison director Peters would be in the process of opening a previously closed prison and building a new prison at the cost of $600 million in taxpayer money over the next decade. But we are starting to see a change in that trajectory as a result of House Bill 3194. The bill provides a balanced roadmap for evidence-based reforms that has just begun to show us results in prison savings. Those savings are projected to be $53 million in the next biennium due to the moderate sentencing changes in House Bill 3194. However, this is not enough to simply change incarceration policies. More importantly, House Bill 3194 also contains provisions that directs the prison savings to be reinvested in the local communities to work collaboratively, innovatively, to reduce their reliance on prison while maintaining public safety. Fully funding these reinvestment efforts now will create even more savings in the future from reduced prison use. We urge using the savings from averted prison growth to be reinvested in communities so that they can do what they do best, and that is reduce recidivism and increase public safety by funding in police, victim services, community corrections, and evidence-based treatment for addiction and mental issues that feed criminal behavior. In Multnomah County alone, I have seen the results of justice reinvestment efforts that are reducing the use of prison beds and enabling people to be successfully stay in communities that lead more productive, crime-free lives. The initial grant of $3 million to Multnomah County for reinvestment efforts is projected to save the state $8.6 million in just 1 year. We support the common-sense, balanced, long-term approach to public safety contained in House Bill 3194. We believe such reforms are delivering accountability, justice, and better return on Oregon's public safety dollar. So thank you for the opportunity to give you this short testimony. And again, I ask your support for full justice reinvestment grant in the amount of $53 million as a part of Senate Bill 5506. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. And Judge Larson, thank you. Could we please bring up any questions for this panel, by the way?
I just wanted to make one quick comment. First off, we definitely need the $53 million, so don't get me wrong. But the other piece of it, I think the reason that this is working is because there is such a broad coalition of support in the district attorneys, in the police and the sheriffs and corrections. So I applaud your efforts, and I hope we will be able to do exactly what you're asking for.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Just to frame, I guess you've got the list, but I think we're also accompanied here today by Kay Torn, the Director of Volunteers for America, Monta Knudsen, Executive Director of the Bridges to Change Program, James Demery, Program Manager for the Bridges to Change, Terry Collins, Recovery Mentor at Bridges to Change, Wally Ibarra, Counselor, Student Opportunity for Achieving Results at Bridgeway Recovery Services, and last but not least, Paul Solomon, who's got a wealth of experience and knowledge as the Executive Director of Sponsors Incorporated down in Eugene.
Great. Excellent. Why don't we bring up the BOA troop first, Kay Tran and Kathy Sivos.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee.
Am I on? Yes. Good afternoon. Chair Williamson and also Chair Shields. I'm Kay Tran, President and CEO of Volunteers of America, Oregon, and I'm here today to enthusiastically support the investment of $58.5 million into the Criminal Justice Commission's budget for the support of justice reinvestment. Volunteers of America, Oregon has a long, rich, and effective history of involvement and leadership in a criminal justice reform agenda. In fact, our founders, 119 years ago, Maud and Ballington Boo, started this effort in Sing Sing in the state of New York, saying then that if we didn't put a focus on rehabilitation of those that were incarcerated, we would continue to see those individuals recidivate and return to prison. And we know that that is our history. Volunteers of America, we were the first organization to administer the treatment arm of the first drug court in the state of Oregon, and in that process have been able to demonstrate excellent outcomes with the population that we have served. Today, we recognize that there are evidence-based programs and services that support the offender population, either in diverting this population to services that prevent the need for incarceration or providing wraparound services to individuals reentering our community after incarceration. We have outcome data that documents these services as a wise investment in terms of controlling cost and supporting rehabilitation and keeping the public safe. 12 years ago, we pioneered and self-financed through foundation support a reentry program called Community Partners Reinvestment, CPR for short. Later, we implemented the Reentry Advancement Coordination Program. Both programs have been able to demonstrate successful outcomes with the population we are serving. I have with me here today Kathy Sivos, who's the program director who is responsible for leading and directing both of those programs and also our new Moving Forward program that we have implemented from the 3194 funding. I believe that after you hear the detailed description and successful outcomes that we've been able to achieve, you will recognize that investing in the justice reinvestment budget is both a smart investment and also will support outcomes that allow individuals to become productive within our community. Volunteers of America, Oregon, again, enthusiastically supports the investment of these dollars in the Criminal Justice Commission budget. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Kathy Sivos.
Thank you, Kay. Co-Chair Shields and committee members, thank you for having me here today. And also, thank you for investing $15 million for justice reinvestment during the 2013 session. My name is Kathy Sivos. I'm the Director of Transition and Reentry Services at Volunteers of America, Oregon, and I'm presenting my testimony in support of the $58.5 million for justice reinvestment in the Criminal Justice Commission's budget. I oversee several of VOA's reentry programs, as Kay has mentioned, and I work with these programs that serve individuals and their families that are impacted by their involvement in the criminal justice system. Through our justice reinvestment resources, Volunteers of America has been an active participant with the implementation of the new Multnomah County Justice Reinvestment Program, which establishes a process to assess offenders, provide a continuum of community-based services, sanctions, and programs that are designed to decrease the utilization of DOC institutions while protecting public safety and holding offenders accountable. It's a lot to do, and we do it well as partnership. So we do that through a comprehensive menu of housing, mentors, employment, family, and treatment services provided in concert with parole and probation. A lot of the partners that are here today, we all make it happen together. So who do we serve? Who have we served already? Since 3194 has passed, VOA has already provided reentry and transitional services to over 115 individuals releasing from Department of Corrections on the short-term trans leave program. So 115 have already come through our doors. And another 125 individuals who were diverted from prison and placed in VOA's continuum of care, either residential or outpatient programs, some of them both, through the Multnomah County Justice Reinvestment Program, through the county, our county's approach. So, you know, I can't tell you a lot of outcomes with those programs. It's a very new program, and we've only reached the threshold of 120 days recently. I will tell you about some of the successes we've had with the program that Kay described. Our newest outpatient program moving forward, designed for this justice reinvestment population, is modeled after the Successful Reentry Enhancement Coordination, or REC, program. Preliminary evaluation of REC in 2011 by the Criminal Justice Commission demonstrated REC participants had 43% reduction in recidivism compared to control group. It's phenomenal. 74% of REC participants achieved employment within 90 days of release from prison. And 84% had independent housing 90 days after release from prison. So we also realize that the most measurable impact we've seen is by linking evidence-based treatment programs with wraparound supports and professional mentors, some of who you will meet today. These people help create healthy connections and promote better decision-making. For example, in the Community Partners Reinvestment Program, we added culturally appropriate mentors who model their own success leaving gangs, crime, drugs, and prison, which resulted in a surge of average days involved in our post-release programming. For the African-American, Hispanic, and Native participants, that was a 274% increase. About 299 days after they released, they're still attached to us. And there was also, for our white participants, a 34.4% increase. Mentors make a huge difference, and we did bring a mentor with us today if you have time to hear her testimony. So I would say that there are needs and challenges. These services are just getting started with justice reinvestment, and they will take time to become truly effective. I don't have those outcomes today because we need time to reduce crime and victimization. The resource needs are vast. If we follow best practices and create a genuine continuum of care, additional resource needs include pre-release programming in our county jails to get people ready for treatment, a continuum of detoxification, residential, and outpatient treatment, mentors to help individuals navigate systems, assistance for families entrenched in poverty, gang activity, and much more supportive housing for short-term stabilization and long-term recovery. Different things. These services are needed for the justice reinvestment population, as well as thousands of individuals supervised in our county that are not in this program. In conclusion, VOA Oregon supports the request for $58.5 million for the Criminal Justice Commission's budget. Thank you for your time.
Right. Do you have any questions?
I just would say I'm a retired Portland cop, and so I've seen VOAs in action for years. You've done a great job. And I think the mentoring program is really great. I recently visited the prison in Angola, Louisiana, and in there they have mentors inside, and it makes so much sense to have somebody who's been there helping somebody.
Right.
It wouldn't do much good for me to come talk to somebody because I don't know about where they're coming from, and having mentors is really helpful, and I really appreciate all the work VOA is doing.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I do have one question for you. So can you tell me, out of the Justice Reinvestment Grants, how much of that Multnomah County's stake actually came into your coffers? How much did you receive out of it?
Our moving forward budget.
So we have in the initial year, it's about $600,000 we're getting for our outpatient services to start up a new program that has startup dollars in there as well. And they're also helping the REC program be a continuation. That was a burn grant, and that's about $420,000. That might be a little high. It might be closer to $270,000. I think the total budget would be $470,000.
And that's money that, if it hadn't been for the justice reinvestment grants, that wouldn't be coming to you.
That is correct. We would not be doing the Moving Forward program. Absolutely.
And did I hear you correctly, Kathy? You said 100 and how many were diverted? I think you said 115 were the transitional leave. How many were diverted?
125, and that is I have my cheat sheet on who's residential here. So I think it was 40 people were from the residential centers. So far, 9 women were in residential treatment and 39 men. and then, or I mean, sorry, 29 men, and, or, sorry, my math, 31 men, and then the rest were 85, I believe, were in our outpatient program.
And those are people that you feel would have gone into the state prison system, or were they diverted from a county jail term?
They received justice reinvestment. The way the program works, that our county could speak to more accurately, but people are assessed, and those people would be prison presumptive. So they would actually go into the prison system, and obviously local control. Some of that population may come if they have less than a year sentence. And we do have, someone here does have those numbers if you'd want to see the difference between those. The lion's share is definitely prison.
Okay, good. That's what I want to get my handle around, is that if we don't fund this, these people actually would have been
physically
a year sentence or more.
Yes, exactly. And the 115 that left.
I see Scott
left.
Taylor nodding his head.
Right, that's correct.
We'll take that as testimony. Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In terms of the mentors, what are your sources for mentors? Do they come from different places? How many do you have? How do you coordinate that?
Well, they apply, and?
Yes, so there are two primary community partners that have been working, that have been employing mentors, Bridges to Change, which you'll hear from today, and Volunteers of America. We have very good contacts in our alumni association. Many of our, Sabrina, who's here today to speak, her husband went through our Community Partners Reinvestment Program. She's very familiar. Her referrals, her references were her old parole officer that we had worked with and staff that we had that had seen her transform. Many people in the recovery community know one another, and so some of the best ways that I get mentors are from other mentors, and they recommend people, and they know who is really leading the charge and who is walking the talk and can help reflect that to other people. So we have a very strong community of people that we've also been working to train. There's a community certification or a community certified mentor through ACBO, which is our the treatment affiliation organization. So you can get certified as a mentor, and it takes training to do that. We've also been trying to increase that training to have some, there's also community health worker model, and that's 90 hours of training. Community mentor training is 40 hours of training. But it's very important to put people in supportive organizations. There's vicarious trauma. There are all these other things happening to people over time. And so, you know, we are very careful. And I know our community justice wants to fund organizations that house mentors that have, you know, their ethics, their boundaries, their supervisors, along with that support if they run into a problem and need assistance.
And one follow-up.
Yes.
And they're all volunteers, is that correct?
No, sir. Are talking about employing professional mentors, and that way you really can. One of the things, we do have people go into the institutions, and you can ask the local county jails, our sheriff's office, as well as Department of Corrections. They want long-term people who have been vetted through our criminal background checks, who have had training, who have you know, credentials that come with us. So there are very many talented volunteer mentors in the community, but what I'm describing are paid professional mentors.
Okay. And I want to underscore that, because these are individuals who now are employed by Volunteers of America.
Right.
They have full-time jobs or part-time jobs, as the case might be, and they're making a contribution to our community. And I say, you know, if we believe in the work that we do at Volunteers of America, particularly on the addictions treatment side, then we must demonstrate to employers in general that we are willing to hire our graduates, and they go on to become very productive and very effective in our organization.
Great. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Before you go, can I ask you a slightly tangential question? One of the things that we're struggling with in this committee and in some others is the background check issue for employment. And you and I have talked about this in the past, Kay, where we've made some pretty aggressive steps in trying to keep bad actors from working with vulnerable populations, but we haven't always hit the mark. Right. Do you have anything you'd like to comment about that? Have things gotten any better, or are we still running into those problems when people come up for air, find recovery, and want to work within the recovery community and can't get a job in that field?
The answer to the question, do we still have challenges? The answer is yes. We still need to work very diligently to make sure that we've got a system and process in place where we hire people that we know can go on with their lives, but also protect the population that we serve from actors that would not be in their best interest. We are very diligent about reviewing the background checks that come both from the Department of Human Services and another resource that we have to make sure that we are striking that balance. But every now and then, we do have individuals who believe they are ready to be employed, but they're prohibited from being employed given the fact that DHS and Volunteers of America is saying that the background is too questionable for us to allow them to come into our workplace. So we still have some more work and more processes to define how we make those decisions. It's not very, it's not where it needs to be, I guess maybe is the way to respond to that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Could we bring up Monta Knudsen and James Demery, please? And Terry Collins, if someone wants to share a third chair, if you're all together.
Terry, come on.
Welcome to the committee.
Hi, thank you, committee, for having us here today. My name is Monta Knudsen, and I am the executive director, as of 3 days ago, for Bridges to Change. But specifically, I came here to talk to you guys about what I think is more important at this point. What was it like for me as a client coming through services that are similar to the services that 3194 is given the opportunity for folks coming out of either institutions, avoiding jail, within our community. So for me, I have over 20 arrest cycles, 10 years of incarceration, multiple trips to the Oregon State Penitentiary. And throughout those times of releasing, there was never really a time that I was sitting in prison wondering how I was going to be a better criminal. The reality was I really wanted the change. I didn't want to keep doing the same old thing. But every time that I got out, I didn't know how to do that. And the first 3-4 times that I released, there was no programming in place to assist me with that. So March 10th, 2003, I was arrested, or March 9th, 2003, I was arrested, and I've been clean, sober, and crime-free since March 10th, 2003. And through that last incarceration and through some programming, I was released to a reentry type program in Washington County. What I got in that program is the very similar things that you're seeing happening within our communities through us at Bridges to Change for Housing and Mentorship, through Volunteers of America, through Treatment, Housing and Mentorship, and those partnerships that have been forged. So the program that I was in is very similar to what we're doing today. What I got there was I got a recovery mentor who had been there, who had done that, and was able to put me in his car and explain to me the simple things, how to go down and get an ID, how to get on food stamps, how to maintain clean and sober housing. These are all basic needs stuff that we take for granted on a daily basis, but for people who have been struggling their whole life with incarceration, addiction, mental health, and criminality, these are tough things to navigate. And so those things were in place for me. So with my willingness to want to take this to the next level and do some positive things in my life, that reentry program gave me the support necessary to fulfill the desire that I already had within me. And what I see with this 3194 opportunity and what I've seen in this last 2 years, so just to kind of back up a little bit, I became a recovery mentor. I was hired by my first mentor as a recovery mentor for Bridges to Change in 2007. I worked my way up and became a program manager for them for about 3 years. And then I was hired by Volunteers of America, and as of 3 days ago, I was on this team with leadership through Kathy Sabos and Kay Turan, through the 3194, through REC, as a program manager for them. So I've seen these services work, and I've seen them work well. And then I've recently returned back to Bridges to Change 3 days ago as their executive director. So I guess that's the investment that you guys got out of the programming that was available at that time. My history says out of the last 12 years clean, if I was using, 6 was probably been incarcerated, And then all the other costs, that's hard to quantify, like trips to the ER. My five children, my five boys who have not been on state assistance in over 12 years that I've taken care of. And tons of other things that would have contributed to costs in my life and in our state county budget's life, right? And so the impact that 3194 has the opportunity to provide other people like myself is huge. I think Kathy said it well a few minutes ago. We're just getting going with this thing. You know, we have a lot of things to work out. Populations are not all the same. And so we need more time, we need more resources to make this work. You know, someone helped me out and they've helped hundreds of people out and I've helped hundreds of people out and those people have helped hundreds of people out in the recovery community. And that's how this thing works, grows, it's exponential. And that's what I see happening in 3194, the potential of it. I hope the appropriate amount of funding comes through so we can continue to do the work that you guys are tasking us to do. I believe that we can do it. Again, appreciate your time today and thank you very much.
Good testimony. Thank you. Who's next?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Shields and committee. I'm Terry Collins, recovery mentor for Bridges to Change. I remember some of you guys from 2013. Feel like old friends. My story is a little bit different. I'm a recovering heroin addict, ex-con. I got clean in August of 1998. That was my last release from prison, and they had no programs when I got out. I was released to the streets. I had nowhere to go except back to what I knew. I was unsuccessful in my parole. I think it took me like 9 years to complete a 3-year parole. And what happened for me was there was a lot more wreckage in the community, more crimes, overdoses, hospital visits, like Monta talked about. And so I finally got clean in 1998, August of 1998. And I became a recovery mentor because I have a passion for women that, you know, a lot of, there's, I'm not close enough.
You're fine.
Okay, bye. I have a passion for helping women that some of them have never had a safe place to stay. You know, the woman from VOA, I forgot her name, I'm sorry, talked about the trauma and the things that go on. So we have the capability as mentors to help them with some of these issues. I'm not a certified counselor. I'm a certified recovery mentor, and I share my experience with these women. I watch them come in, especially out of prison. They're completely overwhelmed. They've never had to deal with their feelings. They've never had to deal with trying to find housing clean and sober. They've lost their children. Their families want nothing to do with them. And so we work with them at the level of just these basic human needs. I've seen absolute miracles happen with these women. I've seen them blossom and grow. I've seen them get their children back. We've got two right now that I mentored, one of them coming out of prison over 3 years ago. And she is now, she's got her own place, and she was just hired by Bridges to Change 6 months ago to be a mentor. She's giving back to the community in a drug court position. I have another one that's a house manager that just got hired by Quest as a mentor. So Monta talked about that. It's a ripple effect. One person helps one person, and they help, you know, 10 people, 15 people. And so I would really, I have strong feelings about reentry and that it works. I see it work. I've been doing this job for 5 years, and I've seen miracles happen. Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee. My name is James Demery, program manager for Bridges to Change in Clackamas County. In 2009, I was released from prison the second time, and 2010 is when I went through treatment and I got clean and I was shown how to do some of the basic things that these two both spoke about, as far as learning how to navigate through, learning how to be a parent, learning how to be clean and sober, learning how to get my basic needs met. Like, I didn't know any of these things. I come from a background of gang culture, criminality, and addiction. I went to prison early at 17, got out when I was 27, and I didn't have any living skills on how to deal with some of my issues. In addition to some of the things they spoke about, the biggest thing that helped me, that my mentor encouraged me to look at, was the mental health piece. For years, I thought that some of my PTSD and some of the unresolved issues I had growing up around some abandonment issues, you know, like I didn't have any worth. This guy believed in me and gave me an opportunity to look at myself and make some decisions. You know, for a long time, I was institutionalized, I would say. You know, grew up in group homes, grew up in prison, multiple stints in treatment. So to be able to be successful, get a job, and give back to the community has been instrumental in my life. I've recently just celebrated my 5 years in recovery. And, you know, it's real important. You know, I'm a product of reentry. I'm a product of the wraparound services that VOA spoke about. You know, it took the mentor, it took treatment, it took my family, and it took some of that nice nudge from my PO, you know, to get me to a place of being responsible. I've been a client of Bridges to Change. I've been a house manager, and I recently became a program manager. So the productive life that I have today was due to the fact that somebody believed in me, understood where I was coming from, and mentoring has given me an opportunity to give that back, help other mentors develop and give that back to their community. And I believe the ripple effect goes down to my kids. You know, I have 4 kids. And to be a father and to be present is the biggest thing. So thank you for allowing me to share my testimony.
Good testimony. Thank you all. Questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next panel. Wally Ybarra and Paul Solomon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, here we go. All right, good afternoon, co-chair and committee. So my name is Wally Ybarra. I work as kind of dual roles. I work as an addictions counselor for Bridger Recovery Services and been doing that for almost 5 years. And as of the last year and 3 months or so, I've been working as a facilitator for the SOAR program. So I'm here in support of justice reinvestment funding. And based on personal experience and professional experience, so professionally, working in the field and in the trenches for the last several years in one way, in one capacity or another, it's what some people already testified to. I observe in the work that it just comes down to the power of numbers. And I spend less focus on the absence of bad behaviors. So I'm opposed to incarceration. So I don't think that the absence of bad behaviors secures the addition of good traits, you know, the development of good characteristics. And so in our work, what I've been able to see through the support of funding and the different programs that come into place is we're seeing guys that just years ago were destined for incarceration for life, who now through some of our programs for sure are we're encouraging guys, they get involved in the community, they serve pretty regularly at the mission, serving food. Some of them even stay at the mission and they're serving food. It's their place to start in terms of getting this new life going. And we're helping them to develop community service projects there. And through this, in terms of the power of numbers, it's guys who, this population of people just statistically, I would say, bring in most of the kids into society, populating our country at a high rate. So when I think about the investment into the medium to high-risk offenders, so many of them, in my observation, have such strong leadership capacity. So when I think about developing that leadership capacity in a positive way, I think about, by the hundreds, guys that are now attending parent-teacher conferences. They're just very engaged in these lives that without that support, without that transformation in their own life, these are kids that are just lining up at the door to enter juvenile detention facilities. And so when I think of power of numbers, that's really what I think about, is just the what some of the people testify, just really kind of in being engaged in this pattern where people are having large influence. I have to believe it that way because I'm a product of that type of support as well. In fact, one of the most influential people in my life is State Representative Betty Comp out of Woodburn. That's where I grew up. She pulled me out of the gangs, out of the criminality, and into school. And 7 years later, it took me 7 years to get my high school diploma. And through her support and investment and connecting me to the resources in the community, different nonprofits and such, then we were able to parlay that, and I ended up graduating from Syracuse University. And so when the way I see things is just, gosh, with support, with connecting people that we work with to community resources, people who are looking to start businesses, people who are active in the community, because that's what we teach a lot, is really success is not, you know, just you getting to that place where you think you did it, but really in the vibe here in Salem locally is being a resident and live two blocks from here. It really is, if you're not serving the community, is it really success? And if you're not giving back, is it success? And so I've seen, that's what I've witnessed personally and professionally through the funds that we're getting. It's just, they're really influencing the culture of Salem, which is to give back. So that's why I'm here to ask for support, continued support for the next biennium of Justice for Investment.
Good testimony.
Yeah.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Paul Solomon. I'm the executive director of Sponsors Incorporated in Lane County, and I'm here today with my esteemed colleagues to ask you to fully fund Justice Reinvestment at the $53 million mark in the coming biennium. For those of you who don't know, Sponsors has been providing reentry services in Lane County for the past 41 years. We currently operate 12 buildings on 5 sites with 145 beds of transitional housing for people with criminal histories. We provide a variety of on-site programs built around our transitional housing for men and women, including a mentoring program where we've served over 400 mentees in the last 3 years, cognitive behavioral therapy, a one-stop reentry resource center that was funded through a burn grant by the Criminal Justice Commission a couple of years ago, that we've been able to employ between 25 and 50 people a month every month since we started that program, a veterans program, an education program, drug and alcohol treatment, services for sex offenders, a legal clinic, and most recently a new facility we built last year for women and children. And at this point, we're developing a new 55-unit complex in partnership with our housing authority to provide long-term housing for people with criminal histories that we hope to break ground on around the end of the year. As a reentry service provider and the vice chair of our LIPSIC, I've seen firsthand the difference these new justice reinvestment programs are making in the lives of our clients and the health of our community. In Lane County, we have used the funding to pay for transitional housing, mental health services, A&D treatment, educational services, and other interventions, creating new jobs and changing lives. As a result, we are able to serve the burgeoning influx of men and women releasing on short-term transitional leave to Lane County, helping the state reduce its prison population, and forestall the need to add beds in Madras and Junction City. These savings are real, and if we are to continue our efforts, we sincerely hope that you will provide us with the resources needed to reduce our reliance on prison beds. I also serve on the 3194 Regional Implementation Committee for the Metro Counties. And we've been analyzing the data from the CJC on a quarterly basis and strategizing with our LIPSIC members. As a result, Lane County has seen a marked reduction in our use of prison beds and the length of stay for certain property crimes. In the last reporting period, we have gone from being up by 58 new intakes this year versus last year to being down by three intakes, so basically flatlining our prison growth for new convictions. Furthermore, we have reduced the average length of stay for ID theft from 47 months to 28 months. These efforts would not have occurred without 3194 in the Justice Reinvestment Program. Lane County's public safety system is in a precarious position. facing reductions in our grant and aid funding and declining federal timber subsidies. Justice reinvestment is a public safety lifeline, allowing us to make a difference on the front end and the back end. However, without the projected increases based on the $53 million number, we will most likely be facing cuts in our community corrections funded programs. If this happens, we will likely regress, programs will decline, and we will once again begin sending more people back to prison, ultimately costing the state and the taxpayers. We have a unique opportunity to make a difference in the lives of the 4,500 men and women who will release from prison this year, and the thousands more who are cycling in and out of our county jails. This last year, we had 12,000 people cycle in and out of the Lane County Jail. We can do what we've been doing in past years and watch us open up the next prison, or we can embrace the tenets of justice reinvestment and utilize the savings to invest in evidence-based strategies at the local level that have been shown to reduce recidivism and our dependence on prison beds. Thank you.
Do have a question for you, Paul. Same question to you as to Kay Tran. About how much money were you receiving just from the justice reinvestment grants?
Okay. Lane County got about $1.3 million in the 13-15 biennium, and we received about $200,000 of that at sponsors. And it was a little complicated because, as you may recall, there were burn grants programs that were funded through CJC, and that burn grant money went into the first allocation of the justice reinvestment dollars. So some of that was actually to continue a burn grant funded program that we had started.
Okay.
How much was that, Paul, with burn grant dollars?
About 60, for sponsors it was about 67,000.
And I think that's all we have. Correct, Linda?
I think so.
All right.
The whole list.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure Wally knows that I will make sure that Representative Comp sees your testimony. She's a pretty special lady to all of us, so we'll make sure she knows you are.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Gave kind words about her.
All right.
Good. Well, great testimony, everyone, today. We really appreciate it, and I'm confident we'll get that number up. How far up will be somebody else's fault. All right, this meeting is adjourned.
Right. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.
Right. Have a great day.